Chapter 10. Done this 28th of July in New Netherland. Subscribed, Adrian van der Donck, Augustin Hermans, Arnoldus van Hardenberg, Jacob van Kewenhoven, Olaf Stevens, by whose name was written der Protest obliged to sign about the government of the Heer Kieft, Michiel Jansz, Thomas Hall, Elbert Elberts, Govert Lokermans, Hendrik Hendricks Kip and Jan Evertspout. Below was written, after collation with the original remonstrance, dated and subscribed as above, with which these are found to correspond, at The Hague, the 13th October, 1649, by me, and was subscribed, D.V. Schleinen, Notary Public. End Project Gutenberg Text, a presentation of New Netherland. Begin Project Gutenberg Text and Tienhoven's answer. Reference material and sources. Cornelius van Tienhoven, Answer to the Representation of New Netherland, 1650. And J. Franklin Jamison, ed. Narratives of New Netherland, 1609-1664. Original Narratives of Early American History, New York. Charles Scribner's Sons, 1909. Introduction, the origin and value of the following document have been sufficiently described in the introduction to that which precedes. Cornelis van Tienhoven, secretary of the province under Kieft and Stuyvesant, had been sent by the latter to Holland, to counteract the efforts of the three emissaries whom the commonalty had sent thither, to denounce the existing system of government. Working in close cooperation with the Amsterdam Chamber of the West India Company, he played a skillful game, and succeeded in delaying and in part averting hostile action on the part of the States General. The piece which follows, is his chief defensive recital of the acts of the administration, and as such has much value. Van Tienhoven had the reputation of a libertine, and conducted himself as such while in Holland, finally escaping to New Netherland in 1651 with a girl whom he had deceived, though he had a wife in the province. Yet Stuyvesant retained him in his favor, promoted him in 1652, to be Schout Fiscal of New Netherland, and used him as his chief assistant. After a disastrous outbreak, however, understood to have been caused by his advice, the company ordered Stuyvesant to exclude him from office, and presently Van Tienhoven and his brother, a fraudulent receiver general, absconded from the province. The manuscript of Van Tienhoven's answer was found by Broadhead in the archives of the Netherlands, and is still there. Two translations of it, differing but slightly, have been printed, the first in 1849 by Henry C. Murphy, in the collections of the New York Historical Society, 2nd Series, 2, 329-338, the other in the documents relating to the colonial history of New York, I-422-432. The former, revised by comparison with the original manuscript at The Hague by Professor William I. Hull, of Swarthmore College, appears in the following pages. Answer to the Representation of New Netherland, by Cornelis van Tienhoven, 1650, a brief statement or answer to some points embraced in the written deduction of Adrian van der Donck and his associates, presented to the High and Mighty Lord States General. Prepared by Cornelis van Tienhoven, Secretary of the Director and Council of New Netherland. In order to present the aforesaid answer succinctly, he, Van Tienhoven, will allege not only that it ill becomes the aforesaid Van der Donck and other private persons to assail and abuse the administration of the managers in this country, and that of their governors there, one in such harsh and general terms, but that they would much better discharge their duty if they were first to bring to the notice of their lords and patrons what they had to complain of. But passing by this point, and leaving the consideration thereof to the discretion of your High Mightinesses, he observes preliminary and generally, that it could as easily, and with more truth be denied, than by them, it is odiously affirmed. 1. In New Netherland. Van Tienhoven prepared this answer in Holland. Coming then to the matter, I will only touch upon those points as to which either the managers or the directors are arraigned. In regard to point number one, I deny, and it never will appear, that the company have refused to permit our people to make settlements in the country and allow foreigners to take up the land. The policy of the company, to act on the defensive, since they had not the power to resist their pretended friends and could only protect their rights by protest, was better and more prudent than to come to hostilities. Trade has long been free to everyone, and as profitable as ever. Nobody's goods were confiscated, except those who had violated their contract, or the order by which they were bound. And if anybody thinks that injustice has been done him by confiscation, he can speak for himself. At all events, it does not concern these people. As for their complaining that the Christians are treated like the Indians in the sale of goods, this is admitted. But this was not done by the company, nor by the directors, because, God help them, they have not had anything there to sell for many years. Most of the remonstrants, being merchants or factors, are themselves the cause of this, since they are the persons who, for those articles which cost here 100 guilders, charge there, over and above the first cost, including insurance, duties, laborers' wages, freight, etc., 100% or more profit. Here can be seen at once how these people lay to the charge of the managers and their officers the very fault which they themselves commit. They can never show, even at the time the company had their shop and magazines there well supplied, that the goods were sold at more than 50% profit, in conformity with the exemptions. The forestalling of the goods by one and another, and their trying to get this profit, cannot be prevented by the director, the more so as the trade was thrown open to both those of small and those of large means. It is a pure calumny that the company had ordered half a fault to be reckoned for a whole one. And, as it does not concern the inhabitants, what instructions or orders the patroon gives to his chief agent, the charge is made for the purpose of making trouble. For these people would like to live without being subject to anyone's censure or discipline, which, however, they stand doubly in need of. Again, it is said in general terms, but wherein should be specified and proven, that the director exercises and has usurped sovereign power. That the inhabitants have had need of the directors appears by the books of accounts, in which it can be seen that the company has assisted all the freemen, some few excepted, with clothing, provisions and other things, and in the erection of houses, and this at the rate of 50% advance above the actual cost in the fatherland, which is not yet paid. And they would gladly, by means of complaints, drive the company from the land, and pay nothing. It is ridiculous to suppose Director Keefe should have said that he was sovereign, like the prince in the fatherland. But as relates to the denial of appeal to the fatherland, it arose from this, that, in the exemptions, the island of the Manhattans was reserved as the capital of New Netherland, and all the adjacent colonies were to have their appeal to it as the supreme court of that region. Less than 1/1 art. XX. Besides, it is to be remarked that the patroon of the colony of Rensselaerswyck notified all the inhabitants not to appeal to the Manhattans, which was contrary to the exemptions by which the colonies are bound, to make a yearly report of the state of the colony and of the administration of justice to the director and council on the Manhattans. Less than 1/1 art. XXVIII. The directors have never had any management of, or meddled with, church property. And it is not known, nor can it be proven, that any one of the inhabitants of New Netherland has contributed or given, either voluntarily or upon solicitation, anything for the erection of an orphan asylum or an almshouse. It is true that the church standing in the fort was built in the time of William Kieft, and 1,800 guilders were subscribed for the purpose, for which most of the subscribers have been charged in their accounts, which have not yet been paid. The company in the meantime has dispersed the money, so that the commonalty, with a few exceptions, has not, but the company has, paid the workmen. If the commonalty desire such works as the aforesaid, they must contribute towards them as is done in this country, and, if there were an orphan asylum and almshouse, there should be rents, not only to keep up the house, but also to maintain the orphans and old people. If anyone could show that by will, or by donation of a living person, any money, or movable or immovable property, has been bestowed for such, or any other public work, the remonstrants would have done it. But there is in New Netherland no instance of the kind, and the charge is spoken or written in anger. When the church which is in the fort was to be built, the church wardens were content it should be put there. These persons complain, because they considered the company's fort not worthy of a church. Before the church was built, the gristmill could not grind with a southeast wind, because the wind was shut off by the walls of the fort. Although the new school, towards which the commonalty has contributed something, is not yet built, the director has no management of the money, but the church wardens have, and the director is busy in providing materials. In the meantime, a place has been selected for a school, where the school is kept by Jan Cornelison. The other schoolmasters keep school in hired houses, so that the youth, considering the circumstances of the country, are not in want of schools. It is true there is no Latin school or academy, but if the commonalty desire it, they can furnish the means and attempt it. As to what concerns the deacons or poor fund, the deacons are accountable, and are the persons to be inquired of, as to where the money is invested, which they have from time to time put out at interest. And as the director is never at the management of it, as against common usage, the deacons are responsible for it, and not the director. It is true Director Keefe, being distressed for money, had a box hung in his house, of which the deacons had one key, and in which all the small fines and penalties which were incurred on court day were dropped. With the consent of the deacons he opened it, and took on interest the money, which amounted to a pretty sum. It is admitted that the beer excise was imposed by William Keefe, and the wine excise by Peter Stuyvesant, and that they continued to be collected up to the time of my leaving there. But it is to be observed here that the memorialists have no reason to complain about it, for the merchant, burgher, farmer and all others, tapsters only excepted, can lay in as much beer and wine as they please without paying any excise, being only bound to give an account of it in order that the quantity may be ascertained. The tapsters pay 3 guilders for each ton of beer and 1 stiver for each can of wine, one which they get back again from their daily visitors, and the travelers from New England, Virginia and elsewhere. The stiver was the 20th part of a gulden or guilder, and equivalent to 2 cents, the guilder being equivalent to 40 cents. The commonalty up to that time were burdened with no other local taxes than the before mentioned excise, unless the voluntary gift which was employed 2 years since for the continuation of the building of the church, be considered a tax, of which Jacob Kewentovan, one who is one of the church wardens, will be able to give an account. One Kewentovan, it will be remembered, was one of the delegates from the commonalty then in Holland. In New England there are no taxes or duties imposed upon goods exported or imported, but every person's wealth is there appraised by the government, and he must pay for the following, according to his wealth and the assessment by the magistrates. For the building and repairing of churches, and the support of the ministers. For the building of schoolhouses, and the support of schoolmasters. For all city and village improvements, and the making and keeping in repair all public roads and paths, which are there made many miles into the country, so that they can be used by horses and carriages, and journeys made from one place to another. For constructing and keeping up all bridges over the rivers at the crossings, for the building of inns for travelers, and for the maintenance of governors, magistrates, marshals and officers of justice, and of majors, captains and other officers of the militia. In every province of New England there is quarterly a general assembly of all the magistrates of such province. One and there is yearly a general convention of all the provinces, each of which sends one deputy with his suite, which convention lasts a long time. All their traveling expenses, board and compensation are there raised from the people. The poor rates are an additional charge. One loose statement, only so far correct, that each New England colony had several sessions of its magistrates each year, sometimes monthly sessions, while their legislative assemblies, general courts, were commonly held more than once a year. Van Tientoven's general contention is correct, that government in New England was far more elaborate and expensive than in New Netherland. But New England had in 1650 a population of about 30,000, New Netherland hardly more than 3,000. The annual meeting mentioned in the next sentence is that of the commissioners of the United Colonies, in which, however, each colony was represented by two deputies, not one. The accounts will show what was the amount of recognitions collected annually in Kieft's time. But it will not appear that it was as large by far as they say the people were compelled to pay. This is not the company's fault, nor the directors, but of those who charge 1, 2, and 300% profit, which the people are compelled to pay, because there are few tradesmen. It will not appear, either now or in the future, that 30,000 guilders were collected from the commonalty in Stuyvesant's time. For nothing is received besides the beer and wine excise, which amounts to about 4,000 guilders a year on the Manhattans. From the other villages situated around it there is little or nothing collected, because there are no tapsters, except one at the ferry, one, and one at Flushing. One the hamlet on the East River opposite Manhattan, the village of Brueckelen stood a mile east of the river. If anything has been confiscated, it did not belong to the commonalty, but was contraband goods imported from abroad, and nobody's goods are confiscated without good cause. The question is whether the honorable company or the directors are bound to construct any works for the commonalty out of the recognition which the trader pays in New Netherland for goods exported, especially as those duties were allowed to the company by their high mightinesses for the establishment of garrisons, and the expenses which they must thereby incur, and not for the construction of poor houses, orphan asylums, or even churches and schoolhouses, for the commonalty. The charge that the property of the company is neglected in order to procure assistance from friends cannot be sustained by proof. The provisions obtained for the Negroes from Tamander were sent to Curacao, except a portion consumed on the Manhattans, as the accounts will show, but all these are mats which do not concern these persons, especially as they are not accountable for them. As to the freemen's contracts which the director graciously granted the Negroes who were the company's slaves, in consequence of their long service, freedom was given to them on condition that their children should remain slaves, who are not treated otherwise than as Christians. At present there are only three of these children who do any service. One of them is at the House of Hope, one at the company's Bowery, and one with Martin Crigier, who has brought the girl up well, as everybody knows. One near Hartford, Connecticut. The company's Bowery, or farm, next mentioned, was the tract extending between the lines of Fulton and Chambers Streets, Broadway and the North River. Martin Crigier was captain of the militia company. That the heir Stuyvesant should build up, alter and repair the company's property was his duty. For the consequent loss or profit he will answer to the company. The burghers upon the island of Manhattans, and thereabouts must know that nobody comes, or is admitted to New Netherland, being a conquest, except upon this condition, that he shall have nothing to say, and shall acknowledge himself under the sovereignty of their high mightinesses the States General and the Lords Managers, as his lords and patrons, and shall be obedient to the director and council for the time being, as good subjects are bound to be. Who are they who have complained about the haughtiness of Stuyvesant? I think they are such as seek to live without law rule. Their complaint that no regulation was made in relation to Suen is untrue. During the time of Director Keith Good, Suen passed at 4 for a stiver, and the loose bits were fixed at 6 pieces for a stiver. Less than one. The reason why the loose Suen was not prohibited was because there is no coin in circulation, and the laborers, farmers, and other common people having no other money would be great losers. And had it been done, the remonstrants would, without doubt, have included it among their grievances. 1. Keith's regulation was adopted April 16, 1641. In Connecticut and Massachusetts, in 1640 at 1641, the legal valuations varied from 4 beats to the penny or stiver, to 6 beats. Nobody can prove that Director Stuyvesant has used foul language to, or railed at as clowns, any persons of respectability who have treated him decently. It may be that some profligate has given the director, if he used any bad words to him, cause to do so. That the fort is not properly repaired does not concern the inhabitants. It is not their domain, but the company's. They are willing to be protected by good forts, and garrisons belonging to the company without furnishing any aid, or assistance by labor or money for the purpose, but it appears they are not willing to see a fort well fortified and properly garrisoned, from the apprehension that malevolent and seditious persons will be better punished, which they call cruelty. Had the director not been compelled to provide the garrisons of New Netherland and Curacao with provisions, clothing and pay, the fort would, doubtless, have been completed already. Against whom has Director Stuyvesant personally made a question without reason or cause? A present of maize, or Indian corn they call a contribution, because a present is never received from the Indians without its being doubly paid for, as these people, being very covetous, throw out a herring for a codfish, as everybody who knows the Indians can bear witness. Francis Doughty, father-in-law of Adrian van der Donck, and an English minister, was allowed a colony at Mespicht, not for himself alone as patroon, but for him and his associates, dwelling in Rhode Island, at Cohanock and other places, from whom he had a power of attorney, and of whom a Mr. S.M.I.T.H. 1 was one of the principal. For the said minister had scarcely any means of himself to build even a hovel, let alone to people a colony at his own expense, but was to be employed as minister by his associates, who were to establish him on the farm in the said colony, for which he would discharge ministerial duties among them, and live upon the profits of the farm. 1. Richard Smith, a Gloucestershire man, settled early in Plymouth Colony, Taunton, removing thence on account of religious differences. He settled in what is now Rhode Island, where he became a close friend of Roger Williams. Between 1640 and 1643 he made the first permanent settlement in the Narragansett country, at Kakamskasik, Wickford, where he had for many years his chief residence, and where his house still stands. His extensive trading interests brought him to Manhattan, where for some years he had a house. Coming to the Manhattans, to live during the war, he was permitted to act as minister for the English dwelling about there, and they were bound to maintain him without either the director or the company being liable to any charge therefor. The English not giving him wherewith to live on, 2 collections were made among the Dutch and English by means of which he lived at the Manhattans. The said colony of Mespicht was never confiscated, as is shown by the owners, still living there, who were interested in the colony with Doughty, but as Doughty wished to hinder population, and to permit no one to build in the colony, unless he were willing to pay him a certain amount of money down for every margin of land, and a certain yearly sum in addition in the nature of crown rent, and in this way sought to establish a domain there, the others interested in the colony, Mr. Smith especially, having complained, the director and council finally determined that the associates might enter upon their property the farm, and lands which Doughty possessed being reserved to him, so that he has suffered no loss or damage thereby. This I could prove also, were it not that the documents are in New Netherland and not here. There are no clauses inserted in the ground briefs, contrary to the exemptions, but the words Nag T. Bierman hereafter, to be imposed, can be left out of the ground briefs, if they be deemed offensive. Stuyvesant has never contested anything in court, but as president has put proper interrogatories to the parties, and with the court's advice has rendered decisions about which the malevolent complain. But it must be proven that anyone has been wronged by Stuyvesant in court. As to what relates to the second vice director, Dinklagen, let him settle his own matters. It can be shown that Brian Newton not only understands the Dutch tongue, but also speaks it, so that their charge that Newton does not understand the Dutch language is untrue. All the other slanders and calumnies uttered against the remaining officers should be required to be proven. It is true that in New Netherland it was commonly stated in conversation that there was no appeal from a judgment in New Netherland pronounced on the island of Manhattans, founded on the exemptions by which on the island of Manhattans was established the Supreme Court for all the surrounding colonies, and also that there had never been a case in which an appeal from New Netherland had been entertained by their High Mightinesses, although it had been petitioned for when Hendrik Janssen Snyder, Lawrence Cornelissen and others, many years ago, were banished from New Netherland. Less than one, it would be a very strange thing indeed, if the officers of the company could banish nobody from the country, while the officers of the colony of Rensselaerswyck, who are merely subordinates of the company, can banish absolutely from the colony whomever they may deem advisable for the good of the colony, and permit no one to dwell there, unless with their approbation, and upon certain conditions, some of which are as follows. In the first place, no one down to the present time can possess a foot of land of his own in the colony, but is obliged to take upon rent all the land which he cultivates. When a house is Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.